Our text this morning will be in 1 John chapter 2, continuing our study here that we've entitled Forever Family. That picture of Noah up here with his family or there at the courthouse, that's us. We are in our natural state estranged from God. We are his enemies because of our sin. We are rebels, but through the work of Christ, we have been brought near to the extent that God would call us his children, that we would be adopted into his family. So that's a powerful theme that certainly is teased out here through John's first letter. So this is almost to the end. If you're trying to navigate your way, 1st and 2nd, 3rd John, Jude, and Revelation. So we're not in John's gospel, but we are in the first of his letters, small letters towards the end of your New Testament. Do you have a relationship with any famous people? Not trying to be too technical on my definition of famous. Could be someone who is perhaps prominent locally. Maybe Rich DeVos. Right? Here's a local business owner who now owns a global company and has made a lot of money in his day, highly respected and well known. Maybe it's somebody like that. Maybe it's a famous athlete or a musician. I don't know who your favorite musicians are, but maybe you've had a chance to get to know someone that we might in some sense consider famous. Growing up in Detroit, I collected a lot of signatures, right? I was around, had opportunity to go to different sporting events especially. Had people in our church that worked for Ford and for Kmart and for General Motors and this sort of thing in the Detroit area. And so different times I'd be able to accompany somebody to a suite, right? And maybe we were able to get there early, or we were able to have, you know, a little different type of access. And so those were fun memories. I like to tell people that I had lunch one time with many of the Detroit Pistons back in the 80s and 90s and some of those championship teams. In reality, I just had lunch in the same room. And it was a big room. But I could see them. And I guess that's partly my point. When we talk about, you know, do you have a relationship with any famous people, I'm not talking about have you met them. I'm not talking about have you gotten their signature. Have you shaken their hand? I'm talking about do you have a relationship with them? Right, the text we're going to look at here uses this terminology of knowing someone. And the idea here is that of experiential knowledge, personal encounter, and the idea of continuity of relationship. So it's, again, not just a quick hello, can I have your autograph, but do you have a relationship with a famous person? Of course, the text here is driving us to think about whether we have a relationship with God. Do we have a relationship with his son, Jesus? John had discovered eternal life in Jesus. That's how he starts his letter here. Talks about what he has heard and what his eyes have seen and what he has touched, the word of life. Jesus was life incarnate. I mean, we know that Jesus was involved in the work of creation, that all things were created through Jesus. We know that Jesus defeated death when he rose from the grave, and they touched the risen Christ. This was not just a figment of their imagination, right? It wasn't just a feel-good story. It was a real resurrection. Death had been defeated. And so John and his fellow disciples had encountered life, eternal life. Not in a potion, not something you could buy, but in a relationship with Jesus. And John so much wanted that for his readers. He says, I want you to enter into this fellowship with us. And ultimately, I want you to enter into a fellowship, a relationship with God the Father and with His Son, Jesus Christ. That's where eternal life is to be found. So this whole issue of whether you have a relationship with God and you have a relationship with His Son is a pretty important issue. For John, it's the question of eternal life. Do you have a vital, personal, ongoing relationship with God, with Jesus? In chapter 1, John critiqued some who thought they had a relationship with God, but they didn't. And so he kind of has to unpack that. Some of these people were self-deceived. And John has to say, no, you didn't. If this is what you think, if this is what you believe, then and you don't have a relationship. If this is how you live, then you don't have a relationship with God. Here, as we move into 1 John chapter 2, he's going to put forward more of a positive statement. He's going to tell us how we can know. He's going to put forward a test of relationship to say, have you met these criteria? So let's look together here, 1 John chapter 2, going to pick up in verse 3. And by this we know that we have come to know Him, if we keep His commandments. Whoever says, I know Him, but does not keep His commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps His word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in Him. Whoever says he abides in Him ought to walk in the same way in which He walked. So here at the outset, John gives two statements that are a test of relationship. The first, we know Jesus if we obey His commandments. We know Jesus if we obey His commandments, verses 3 and 4. By this we know that we have come to know Him if we keep His commandments. There's the test. Now, this struck me as a bit of a curious statement. If we said it about anyone else, it would be rather odd, would it not? If you really know Susie, you will keep her commandments. If you really know Fred, you will keep his commandments. I wouldn't really consider that a test of friendship with most of you, right? That you have to obey me, or I have to obey you. So it's an odd statement, and yet we're not talking about just any person here, are we? We are talking about Jesus the Christ. We are talking about the pre-existent one from whom all life has proceeded. We are talking about the one who has defeated death. We are talking about the one who has redeemed or purchased us out of the slave market of sin. We belong to Him. We're talking about the King of Kings, the rightful King of the universe, King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And if you really know Him, if you have a personal, ongoing relationship with Him, then you will keep His commandments. If you've really come to recognize who He is, if you think Jesus is a great teacher, if you just think Jesus is a kind man, peace-loving individual, then you won't necessarily keep His commandments. But if you really know Him, then you will recognize Him for who He is and you will keep His commandments. It's a line out of one of the old Robin Hood movies back in the 80s. Robin Hood was gathering what would be his band of merry men, right? And he shows up and they say, do you want to join us, Robin Hood? And he said, no, I want to lead you. Right? I mean, Jesus is not simply our friend, although he is that. He is our master. And so the person who really claims to know him, to have a relationship with him, will obey his commandments. He reiterates, he gives another very similar statement at the beginning, at the end of verse 5. By this we may know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked. So we know Jesus. We can say we know Jesus if we follow his example, if we walk as he walked. I don't think that John is essentially giving two different tests. I think he's giving one test, and he's stating it two different ways. So Jesus gave his commands, right? We should keep his commands. Jesus lived what he commanded. So we not only have it in audible, verbal form recorded for us in the scriptures, but we have it in lived out form. By the way, the command here that's being referenced within the context is the command to love. In fact, he starts off here talking in the plural about commands, right? Just generally speaking, in a theoretical sense, that the one who claims to know Jesus is the one who obeys his commands or commandments. But as we move through the text, he very quickly narrows in and begins to just talk about commandment, singular. It's the command to love. The command to love one another, particularly within the family of God, within the family of believers. This is the command. And again, Jesus both issued it as a command, and he lived it as the model for his disciples. As I was reading this text, I couldn't help but think of John's gospel and this passage in John 13. Jesus has his disciples gathered, right? This is that key upper room discourse. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. Here's that singular command that Jesus boils down for his disciples. And again, notice, not only does he issue it as a declaration, but he points them to his own example, right? Just as I have loved you, in that way, to that extent, so you are to love one another. So here's the test of a relationship with Christ. We know Jesus if we obey his commandments, and we know Jesus if we follow his example. That's the backbone here of this text. Again, John has pointed out some who claim to know Jesus, and he said, no, you don't. You're a liar. You're self-deceived. You maybe have come to the place where you think you know Jesus. You've told yourself often enough, you've repeated it, that you think you have a relationship with Jesus, but you don't. Let me tell you what it looks like to have a relationship with Jesus. Let me tell you how you can know. Let me give you a test of relationship. And he puts this forward. So concisely, that's the backbone here. A call to obedience, a call to love. These are the marks of those who are in God's forever family. I want to take the moments we have left and look again at this text. And we're going to move up actually through verse 11. But there's a few things here that I'm calling compelling realities. Things that just should motivate us to follow the commands of Christ. Things that ought to push us and inspire us to love as we've been commanded to do. And I think we have this sobering test that's put out here. But there's a lot here that I think really encourages us as we think about what it is to obey the commands of Christ and to love one another. So I'm going to highlight three of those. The first is here in these first few verses. When we obey Jesus, we demonstrate our love for God in the strongest possible way. When we obey Jesus, we demonstrate our love for God in the strongest possible way. Let's pick it back up again in verse 3. Notice this. By this we know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. Verse 4. Whoever says, I know him, but does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. The person who really keeps Jesus' commandments demonstrates their love for God in the fullest possible way, the strongest possible way. You see, loving one another is the way we show our love for God. And John brings these ideas together, that we have love for God and love for one another, and these things are inseparable and intertwined. And the way you show your love for God is by your love for one another. You might be familiar with this little book by Gary Chapman. It's not a new book. The Five Love Languages. And he identifies five different ways in which we communicate love. Gift giving, words of affirmation, quality time, physical touch and closeness, and acts of service. And his contention is that we not only have to think about how we might naturally choose to express appreciation or love, but we have to think about how the other person receives love. So early in our marriage, Sherry and I would come home from a day at work and grab a quick bite and give her a kiss on the cheek and tell her I loved her and scoot out to another meeting. And I came to realize that didn't mean a lot to her. It was great, but where was the quality time? She's a quality time person, right? So if I do that too many days in a row, she feels like I don't care about her, right? I'm trying to communicate, I love you, and she's not hearing it, right? And sometimes there's that opportunity for cross-communication, right? So my point in all that is this. We must understand God's love language. We might go to Bible studies, and we might attend church regularly, and we might give regularly in terms of our tithe and offerings. Those are not God's love languages. You want to communicate that you love God? Then love his children. Love one another. If you do that, you will, your love for God will be perfected, right? Will be completed. You will truly and fully demonstrate your love for God. So John puts that out there. To me, that's a compelling reality. I think about that. Wow, this is by laboring alongside this person, by sacrificing what I would like to do in order to do something to help someone else. By doing these things, I am communicating in the strongest possible way, God, I love you. I love you. So thankful that you've allowed me to be part of your family, that you've compelling reality. When we obey Jesus, we demonstrate our love for God in the strongest possible way. Here's a second reality. When we strive to obey the old, new commandment, We do so in the new and powerful reality inaugurated by Jesus. We have to unpack this. This takes us into verse 7 and 8. Beloved, I am writing you no new commandment, but an old commandment that you had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word that you have heard. At the same time, it is a new commandment that I am writing to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. So notice now again, John starts to speak not just generically of obeying Jesus' commandments, but now he's going to zero in on the commandment. And he talks about it just in an interesting way. He says it's really not a new commandment, it's an old commandment. It's the commandment that Moses talked about and that was reiterated by the prophets, right? The command to love. Boil down the Ten Commandments, and what do you have? Love God. Love your neighbor. This is just foundational stuff. So this isn't new material. And yet he says, in another sense, this commandment is new. Verse 8, at the same time, it is a new commandment that I'm writing to you, which is true in him, in Jesus, and in you all you believers. So the content of the command is not any different than what we read about in the scriptures, the Old Testament scriptures. But what has changed is our ability to keep the commandment. This new commandment was in Jesus. It was being played out in his life. There was an internal aspect to the commandment. And that is also happening in our lives. We're told that the new commandment, the new covenant, was going to be written on the heart. And so there's this new internal thing. We know that God's Spirit was active in the life of Jesus in his earthly ministry. And that same Spirit is active in our lives as we seek to obey the commands of Christ. And he writes here, the end of verse 8, to say that this is true, this new commandment is in us because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. That something happened in the work of Christ, right? In his work on the cross, in his resurrection from the dead, a new era has been dawned. The darkness is being pushed aside and the light is dawning. To me, the compelling reality here is that we are able to obey. Something new has happened in our hearts because of the work of Christ and the ministry of the Spirit and a new age that is dawning. That's a compelling reality that I can engage in obeying the commands of Christ and loving my brothers and sisters in the family of God, and be a part of this new reality that God is carrying out. So when we strive to obey, we do so in the new and powerful reality inaugurated by Jesus. A final compelling reality that I want to highlight here this morning, that is that when we love our siblings and the family of God, when we obey Jesus' commands, we walk in the light, and we are safeguarded against sin. Let's pick up here in verse 9. Whoever says he is in the light and hates his brother is still in darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. So he describes the situation both for the individual who walks in the light, who obeys the commands of Christ, who loves his brother, and also the situation for the individual who remains in darkness, who chooses not to obey the commands of Christ, who chooses not to love his brother. And he unpacks those two situations. And I was, first of all, just struck with the dichotomy, the contrast between love and hate. None of us would want to see ourselves in the realm of hate, right? We don't hate. We don't have animosity in our hearts towards other brothers and sisters. At least most of the time, right? Hopefully. Hopefully we don't. But that's a strong word, hate. But here's what I was struck with. Either you love your brother and sister, or you hate them. There's not a neutral category. In other words, either I sacrifice and lay aside my own agenda for the good of my brother and sister, or I act selfishly. And that essentially is an act of hate towards them. There's just a strong dichotomy here between love and hate. But notice what it says here about the one who loves his brother. They abide in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. Verse 10. That word for stumbling is a word for sin or temptation. In other words, a person who gives themselves to loving their brothers and sisters in the family of God doesn't wrestle as much with sin. It's a safeguard. That kind of a lifestyle is a safeguard against sin. Here's the compelling reality that ought to inspire us to obey the commands of Christ and to love our brother. Those who give themselves to loving others have fewer problems. Now, don't get me wrong. This is not a health and wealth message. Right? People who serve others get sick just like everybody else, right? They have different catastrophic situations that happen, and their houses flood, their power goes out, right? So we all have problems in a sin-cursed world. But a lot of our problems are just a result of sin and selfishness, right? And what John is saying here is that those who will give themselves to loving others will head off a lot of grief. He just tell you, if you are committed to serving even your own children, loving them unconditionally, if you take that kind of a posture and you teach that to your children, that has a good payoff. Right? So if you want to just get in a good place in your life in terms of healthy relationships, then sign up to serve in the nursery. Right? Sign up to be a helper in that class. Take on that teaching responsibility. Give yourself to serving others. It's not only the right thing to do. It's not only just obedience, but it is the best thing to do. And that's a compelling reality, that serving others, it's counterintuitive, but serving others, putting others first, is actually best for me. And conversely, the person who just focuses on themselves, hoarding their resources, hoarding their time, guarding their emotional reserves, is blind and groping through the darkness and miserable. It's counterintuitive. But that ought to compel us, in God's economy, that reality ought to compel us to serve. I trust you can say with confidence today that you have a relationship with Jesus Christ. That's how we started off, wasn't it? You know any famous people? Do you have a relationship with any famous people? I hope you can say today with confidence that you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, the Son of God. John has been pointing his readers to Jesus as the source of eternal life embodied. And if you don't know Christ today, you can come to Him in simple faith, acknowledging your own sin, acknowledging the fact that you are an orphan outside of His family, estranged from Him, a rebel against His cause. And you can be welcomed into that forever family. But John goes on here in this text to really challenge our lifestyle. He really asks us, does your life affirm that relationship that you claim? Are you walking in obedience to His commands? Are you giving yourself to loving one another? And the text is full of encouragements and motivations and calls to give yourself fully and completely to obeying the commands of Jesus and loving your brothers and sisters. I ask that you'd stand with me as we respond in song this morning. Familiar hymn, Trust and Obey. We're going to sing just two verses here. One of the things I always notice in singing this song is it uses the word happy. This is how we will be happy. I don't know how you think about that, but I think that that there's a joy that comes in serving Jesus. I won't quibble over the semantics of the word, but there is joy that comes in serving Christ. So let's sing and affirm our commitment this morning.